Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We are up to Book 11, Chapter 30. The glow of the first fire that began on the 2nd of September was watched from the various roads by the fugitive Muscovites and by the retreating troops with many different feelings. The Rostov party spent that night at Mitishchi, 14 miles from Moscow. They had started so late on the 1st of September, the road had been so blocked by vehicles and troops, so many things had been forgotten for which servants were sent back, that they had decided to spend that night at a place 3 miles out of Moscow. The next morning they woke late and were again delayed, so often that they only got as far as Great Mitishchi. At 10 o'clock that evening, the Rostov family, and the wounded travelling with them, were all distributed in the yards and huts of that large village. The Rostovs' servants and coachmen and the orderlies of the wounded officers, after attending to their masters, had supper, fed the horses, and came out into the porches. In a neighbouring hut lay Raevsky's adjutant with a fractured wrist. The awful pain he suffered made him moan incessantly and piteously, and his moaning sounded terrible in the darkness of the autumn night. He had spent the first night in the same yard as the Rostovs. The Countess said she had been unable to close her eyes on account of his moaning, and at Mitishchi she moved into a worse hut simply to be farther away from the wounded man. In the darkness of the night, one of the servants noticed above the high body of a coach standing before the porch the small glow of another fire. One glow had long been visible, and everybody knew that it was little Mitishchi burning, set on fire by Mamonov's Cossacks. "But look here, brothers, there's another fire," remarked an orderly. All turned their attention to the glow. "But they told us little Mitishchi had been set on fire by Mamonov's Cossacks. But that's not Mitishchi, it's farther away. Look, it must be in Moscow." Two of the gazers went round to the other side of the coach and sat down on its steps. "It's more to the left. Why, little Mitishchi is over there, and this is right on the other side." Several men joined the first two. "See how it's flaring," said one. "That's a fire in Moscow, either in the Sushchevsky or the Rogovsky quarter." No one replied to this remark, and for some time they all gazed silently at the spreading flames of the second fire in the distance. Old Daniel Terentich, the Count's valet, as he was called, came up to the group and shouted at Mishka, "What are you staring at, you good-for-nothing? The Count will be calling, and there's nobody there. Go and gather the clothes together." "I only ran out to get some water," said Mishka. "But what do you think, Daniel Terentich? Doesn't it look as if that glow were in Moscow?" remarked one of the footmen. Daniel Terentich made no reply, and again, for a long time, they were all silent. The glow spread, rising and falling farther and farther still. "God have mercy. It's windy and dry," said another voice. "Just look. See what it's doing now, oh Lord. You can even see the crows flying. Lord have mercy on us sinners." "They'll put it out, no fear." "Who's to put it out?" Daniel Terentich, who had hitherto been silent, was heard to say. His voice was calm and deliberate. "Moscow it is, brothers," said he. "Mother Moscow the White." His voice faltered, and he gave way to an old man's sob. And it was as if they had all only waited for this to realize the significance for them of the glow they were watching. Sighs were heard, words of prayer, and the sobbing of the Count's old valet. All right, there we go, another chapter down, and rather uniquely, we're with the servants and seeing it from the point of view of the servants. Kansas 57 said, "What is the significance of this chapter being from the servant's point of view instead of the Rostovs?" Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? Because we only really saw, the only glimpse into the Rostovs was the Countess being upset that one of the wounded was making a lot of noise, and she ended up moving to a different camp to be away from the wailing wounded man. I think we see it from the point of view of the servants. Well, actually, I'm not sure why, but the effect it had was that it kind of made you realize that it's home. Moscow is their home too. They have this emotional attachment. I mean, this whole novel so far has kind of made it feel like the city and the whole country really belongs to these elite upper class, and then everyone else is just these servants, these serfs, sort of thing. But here we actually felt like the servants too loved their city and didn't like to see it burning down. Who Was Once Delight said, "I appreciate Tolstoy's focus on the servant class during the evacuation and burning of Moscow. I like a lot of 19th century literature, and it rarely speaks to the experience of anyone outside of the aristocracy, and or clergy. Since I became a history teacher, it is hard for me to engage with a narrative without thinking about the voices that aren't being heard in the story. Much as I love Austen and Eliot, the voices of Mage and Stuarts don't show up much in their work." When Moscow burned, the majority of the people who lost their homes were not of the nobility, and of course they feared it just as much and mourned it just as deeply when it happened. I am glad that Tolstoy speaks to this, and to the love and pride that these people have for lives that aren't often thought of as memorable, enviable, or beloved. Really nice comment, Who Was Once Delight. Really insightful. And it is a bit like that, and even with later work. You know, this was written in the late 1860s, and you don't get much of a look into the servants and the underclasses. But even through to the early 1900s, a lot of work is the same. And I think you've got to really get through to... I mean, I know one of the big points of difference for George Orwell was that he forced himself to go and live amongst the poverty-stricken in Paris and London, hence his first novel, Down and Out in Paris and London. It's all from the point of view of the near-destitute in those cities, and that was very unique at that time, to tell a story from that point of view. And that was right through, that was in 1933 that was published. I guess it's just something that wasn't really done. So Tolstoy even just doing it for one chapter is, I suppose, probably quite a unique thing. Mallow Yellow said, "I'd imagine that to most of these servants, Moscow was their only home. The loss and destruction of Moscow must have been devastating for them to watch. Maybe because 9/11 was just a couple of days ago, I couldn't help but reflect on how I felt while watching the World Trade Center buildings collapse." That's a good comparison there, in terms of watching your city disintegrate, you know, be destroyed. I can imagine them on the horizon and a fire way out in the horizon, 14 miles away, would be visible. It would certainly be visible, more than visible. You could see it, but it wouldn't be alarming. It would be a little underwhelming, wouldn't it? But then to have it creep up on you of exactly what you're looking at, like a look of fire, and then realizing, oh, that's our city on fire. That's a big fire. Wow, yeah, quite a powerful thing. All right. I am going to wrap it up there for this episode. I will do a little reminder about the Patreon. If you want to support me in being a podcaster, please subscribe on patreon.com/ayearofwarandpeacepodcast. I am going to push on at the end of this year. This podcast is not ending. We won't be doing a Year of War and Peace. We'll be doing something else. We're moving on. Probably I'm leaning towards that Hemingway's reading list. Oh, God. It makes me so ironic that I would mispronounce that. Here I am saying I'm going to host a show about reading, but I can't get my words straight. I want to keep reading to you guys, and I want to keep this community going, and I think I'll make my way through that list. I'd love for you guys to come along, and I would love for it to become more and more of a significant part of my life doing this podcasting. At the moment, it's something like an afterthought for the end of my day. Right before I go to bed, I put the microphone on and I make this podcast. Once everything else is done, you know, once I've made my money for the day and done all my responsibilities and the house is clean and, you know, all the rest, dinner's made, everything I've had to do. And at the very end of the day, I get the podcast done. And I really enjoy it, but I can't really allot much more time to it than that. I would love to, though, if I could expand it out to be something that's part of my income, I would certainly put a lot more time into the podcast, and it would no longer be something that I do once everything else is finished. It would actually be part of my daily responsibilities, I suppose. Not that it isn't. I mean, I haven't dropped the ball yet. What are we, 260 days in? Anyway, you get my point. As it becomes something that actually earns me money, it becomes a part of my career, I suppose. And I would love to be a career podcaster. How cool would that be? What a dream job. Anyway, for as little as a dollar a month, you can subscribe. You'll get a few bonus podcasts that are only available to the subscribers. And you'll get the pleasure of knowing that you are helping me live my dream. That's kind of cool. Other than that, thank you very much for listening today. And I will see you tomorrow.